Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Stop Overthinking Your Relationship. Break the cycle of anxious rumination to nurture love, trust, and connection with your partner. By Alicia Munoz, LPC. Forward by Linda Carroll, LMFT. Narrated by Victoria Villarreal. Publisher's note. This audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit Tantor.com and type Stop Overthinking Your Relationship into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page. Then, under the supplemental content section, please enter the access code SLOW and then click the unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All exercises referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. This publication is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering psychological, financial, legal, or other professional services. If expert assistance or counseling is needed, the services of a competent professional should be sought. Foreword. Alicia Munoz sets the bar for writing honest, helpful, and informative books that are also engaging and true. I am struck by her wisdom and heartened by her simple honesty in describing her struggles. She is a wise, insightful, and compassionate clinician and person. She doesn't try to conceal her challenges, but instead models the rewards of conscious love in a very real way. Even writing this foreword helped me make a shift in my own relationship after I'd read only a few pages. A nasty storm was raging over our town. The ground around our house, saturated by days of rain, released its grip on the roots of an Oregon white oak, which promptly toppled over and crashed onto our porch. As the storm howled over my head, my husband went outside to saw branches and painstakingly remove the broken tree. It took him most of the day. At last, he stuck his head through the door to tell me he was almost done. When I went outside to see his work, I noticed that the tree was gone. Even the muddy ground had been cleaned up. But what I homed in on at that moment was that the shovel and wheelbarrow were still in the yard. I remember thinking to myself, that stuff shouldn't be there. Why can't he put things away when he's finished? He should be more conscientious. Even though he'd been heroically schlepping in the storm for hours to save our porch, my thoughts had focused on what he had not done. And then I got it. Instantly. I was ruminating about what was wrong. What Alicia calls a rumination cycle had started spinning. In my case, a hybrid of control and blame. My husband's little oversight had commandeered my attention. I was like a cat who licks a sore paw and so irritates the wound. Luckily, I saw it. And so I was able to stop carping on my husband's negligence and pivot into appreciating the hard work he had put into the tree removal for both of our benefit. Alicia's metaphors are striking. She compares relationship rumination to what Apple users call the spinning beach ball of death, a path that goes round and round with no exit ramp to stop it except awareness of your own thinking and behavior. I've become more aware of my own spinning beach ball after reading this extraordinary and relatable book. As a frequent writer and speaker on the topic of relationships, I describe love as a feeling and loving as a skill set. In Stop Overthinking Your Relationship, Alicia focuses on essential and learnable skills for loving well, both in and out of a committed relationship. One of the foundational skills is cultivating a growth mindset. From there, in her exploration of five attachment style pairings, she offers a fresh perspective on attachment style dynamics in love relationships and looks at how unchecked rumination fuels both anxious and avoidant attachment. Alicia's essential message is that we can change the plot of our love stories. One way to do this, and undo rumination, is by learning how to be with the things we typically and chronically avoid. Using a simple, elegant practice, she sums up with the acronym SLOW, which stands for seeing, labeling, opening, and welcoming. She offers a concrete tool for counteracting the conditioning that has turned many of us into spectacular overthinkers in love. The powerful concepts packed into this memorable four-letter acronym form the basis of every effective mindfulness approach I know. In the end, it's not our differences that make or break our relationships, but our interpersonal skills. Skills we can practice to effectively navigate our troubles. These skills can even turn some of our troubles into gifts. With humor and warmth, Stop Overthinking Your Relationship delivers essential information on reducing rumination and creating a loving relationship to anyone willing to pick it up, follow its suggestions, and slow down. Linda Carroll, therapist and author of Love Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting, Wholehearted Love. Introduction. Love's Quiet Enemy. Once upon a time, two people fell in love. Together, they traveled, shared meals, went on adventures, had sex, talked, cried, fought, made up, and revealed fears and longings. Here, I'll name these people, you and me. You was confident, though unmotivated, so being around me inspired and energized you, providing a sense of purpose. Me was ambitious, though socially reserved, so being around you helped me relax and take risks. As a couple, for a while, they felt complete. After several months, they moved in together. Me received a promotion and worked late. You made lots of plans with friends. They touched less, talked less, and ate meals on the fly. They got busy, looked at their phones, started sleeping in separate beds, and rarely had time for adventures or trips. They worried about the future, controlled each other, and doubted their love. They grew resentful. It didn't look like they were going to make it as a couple. I wish I could say the plot line of this story is unusual, but it's not. I hear it often as a couples therapist, even when the details are different. So how do love stories with passionate, hopeful beginnings like this go wrong? Here's how. Couples get derailed by overthinking. In romantic relationships, overthinking gradually, day after day, month after month, interferes with a couple's access to essential relational sources and skills. It shortens their bandwidth for awareness, empathy, curiosity, and whatever is happening in their own hearts. Basically, overthinking turns into a bad cognitive habit. It starts with a thought. This thought, an opinion, misinterpretation, prediction, or judgment, leads to more thoughts. Perhaps some of these examples may be familiar to you. When one partner comes home late, the other one thinks, they're neglecting me. Work is more important than I am. If one of them doesn't initiate lovemaking, the other one thinks, we're on our way to a sexless marriage. I knew this would happen. If one of them is distracted at the dinner table, the other one thinks, they're bored. They have nothing to say to me. I can't believe it's come to this. If one of them forgets to ask a follow-up question after a doctor's visit, the other one thinks, they're selfish and insensitive. I'm alone in this relationship. If thoughts like these arise when a partner feels threatened, then similar thoughts may follow. Reflexive, negative thoughts fueled by anxiety don't just pop up and go away. They multiply. They may even become thought pinwheels, spinning into what is known as rumination in the mental health world. Each partner's ruminative thoughts distort their perceptions of their mate. Over time, as the distortions build into stories about the other person, partners stop opening up, relating directly, and sharing themselves. They lose touch with the adventure of love. It's hard to blame couples who, like the two people in this story, find themselves losing hope in their relationship due to overthinking. In our workplaces, schools, and communities, thinking is valued more than openness to experience. Thinking is viewed as our most valuable human asset, the mainspring of civilization, culture, art, psychology, science, and literature. As a result, many of us are skilled overthinkers by the time we enter romantic relationships. Love and life are uncertain. When we can't predict the future, don't know the solution to a problem, or get overwhelmed, filtering our experiences through stories and narratives gives us a sense of agency and control. In a culture where thinking is glorified, it becomes the cheapest and most accessible mind-altering substance. Naturally, overthinking tends to be a couple's go-to coping strategy when partners get scared, feel lost, or can't figure out what to do. In my therapy practice, I've seen overthinking erode love between people whenever it operates unseen and unchallenged. My vantage point isn't solely professional either. As a former chronic ruminator with a preference for doubt and self-pity cycles, I've suffered the destructive effects of overthinking firsthand. Following a painful divorce in my late 20s, I didn't have much faith in healthy partnerships or in my ability to be in one myself. Now, over 2 decades later, I know differently. Happy love stories are created, not stumbled upon. Not only have I lived the changes that come with undoing rumination in the relationship my husband and I have developed over the last 17 years, but I've also helped hundreds of couples foster deeper intimacy and safer, more fulfilling connections by doing this work. If you've chosen this book, chances are you've seen the damage anxious overthinking can do in a relationship. If so, you're in the right place to learn a better way. How relationship rumination works against you. Have you ever observed a colorful little beach ball pop up on your computer screen, usually when something has gone wrong? Macintosh users refer to it as the spinning beach ball of death, or sometimes the marble of doom. If you've witnessed this endlessly spinning rainbow pinwheel in action, you know it's a sign of trouble. You may have to force quit your software program and lose some of your recent work. You could end up spending hours on the phone with tech support. The spinning beach ball of death is a nifty metaphor for overthinking. When overthinking interrupts the natural flow of life, it's also a sign of trouble. Unlike a beach ball, rumination cycles aren't colorful. They're dreary and predictable, made up of repetitive negative thoughts instead of rainbow colors. The more they spin, the more space they take up in your mind. They spin so fast and take up so much space that it gets hard to see past them. It's easy to fall into the trap of assuming their anxiety-provoking content is true. When you ruminate, your attention and energy get siphoned off into repetitive negative thinking. The catch with doing it in a relationship is this: overthinking doesn't only deplete and squander your attention and energy, it affects your partner too. Although rumination cycles seem to occur privately in your own mind, they spin in a relational field you both co-create. Overthinking has an impact, regardless of whether it happens in one mind or two. It stokes frustrations and insecurities and influences communication and behavior. If partners spin dual, you might call them dueling, rumination cycles, troubles will intensify. Each person risks seeing the other through a haze of negativity, caught in the crossfire created by the negative emotional charge of dueling rumination cycles. Partners bristle and grow defensive. I use the term relationship rumination to describe this type of overthinking. In co-rumination, a related concept, two people ruminate together about the same thing. Relationship rumination is a broader term meant to describe a general pattern of repetitive negative overthinking engaged in by one or both partners that erodes trust and sabotages love. In this book, I'll use the terms rumination, overthinking, repetitive negative thinking, passive thinking, and relationship rumination to describe various of the same phenomenon. Passive, unwanted overthinking that happens so much and so often it erodes a couple's bond. Rumination has been linked to eating disorders, anxiety, depression, PTSD, substance abuse disorders, and OCD. Not only is it a symptom of unhappiness, it's also a cause. A 2013 study of 32,827 people done by the University of Liverpool in England exposes rumination as a higher predictor of mental health problems than biological factors, social factors, or traumatic life events. Tough life events, a history of mental illness, poverty, and interpersonal problems lead to poorer mental health. At the same time, these things lead there indirectly, through rumination. In other words, circumstances become serious mental health problems only when we can't stop thinking about them in unhealthy ways. This isn't merely an interesting fact supported by research. If rumination leads to depression and anxiety, then decreasing it can do the opposite: increase your well-being. You can't change your past or your genetic makeup, but you can change how much you ruminate. This isn't to say you should ignore painful circumstances. That would promote mental illness by denying reality. But if you can channel your energies into more helpful coping strategies and thinking styles, you have a better chance of overcoming obstacles. A systematic review of 19 studies focused on reducing rumination conducted between 2002 and 2012 found that mindfulness-based and cognitive behavioral interventions can effectively help reduce rumination. Less rumination leads to happier love stories. When overthinking combines with the emotionally charged needs and fears in an intimate adult bond, you can end up reliving the same conflict with your partner over the course of many years, though it may disguise itself in novel forms. You may even hear some couples talk about having the same fight they had on their first date a decade later. Awareness of your repetitive negative thinking can reduce the intensity of conflicts, or even diffuse them completely. The differences between partners don't make or break a relationship. What does is how partners think about these differences. How to use this book. If you can't see how something hurts you, it's easier to keep doing it. Many couples don't see how rumination erodes their connection. This book will help you recognize the toll overthinking takes so you can reconnect with what matters most. In the first chapter, you'll explore relationship rumination in depth: what it is, why it's overlooked, and how it ties into early attachment fears. In chapter 2, you'll dive into the concept of a relationship field along with your attachment style pairing, or ASP. In chapters 3 through 7, you'll get to know your mindset and identify your thoughts, rumination cycles, triggers, warning lights, and dead-end scripts. You'll also be introduced to SLOW, a 4-step practice that can help you shift from thinking about what's upsetting you to being with what's happening in the moment. SLOW stands for seeing, labeling, opening, and welcoming. In Chapter 8, you'll review practical tips for applying and using SLOW. In Chapter 9, you'll learn important preventative, palliative, and curative relationship care skills to nurture your bond. You'll also create your own personalized relationship first aid kit. Exercises will guide you to reflect on and apply the skills you'll be mastering here to your own life. 10 different couple stories have been woven through these chapters. They're meant to highlight problems arising from relationship rumination, as well as ways of handling them. Although I've drawn them from my work as a therapist, the couples featured in these chapters are fictional. Take what serves you from their struggles and successes and disregard what doesn't. Most of the exercises in this book invite you to write responses or track thoughts. I recommend you get a blank journal for this purpose so you have everything in one place and can easily revisit it later. The quizzes, prompts, and assessments you'll find in these chapters are not diagnostic tools. They're meant to guide you and stimulate reflection. You'll find worksheet versions of most of the exercises online at newharbinger.com/50034. If you're single, you'll benefit from practicing SLOW and working through the solo and joint exercises on your own. These can be done alone with slight adjustments. Focus on your relationship with yourself and examine the role overthinking has played in past relationships. Moments of overwhelm, frustration, and anxiety are inevitable when you're learning new things, looking at patterns, reflecting on yourself, and exploring your personal history. If you and your partner do this work together, do it in your own way and at your own pace. I encourage what I call adult timeouts. More on these in Chapter 9, as a form of palliative relationship care. Take adult timeouts if you find yourself disagreeing or arguing. You'll probably have different motivation levels for listening to chapters, doing exercises, and using tools and techniques. That's totally normal. Taking an adult timeout means separating from each other for a brief time. This can help you shift your attention away from a conflict, regain perspective, and calm down. Mishandling vulnerable information your partner reveals in trusting moments, or using it as proof of negative beliefs or judgments, won't help either of you. Shaming, punishing, manipulating, or controlling your partner undermines safety, making it harder to share and collaborate. If you catch yourself engaging in these or any other relationship-sabotaging behaviors, take responsibility for your missteps and repair. Skip ahead to Chapter 9 if you need to, and hear about what goes into a successful repair so you can start practicing it now. Discomfort isn't always a bad thing. Difficult feelings, sensations, impulses, and insights will arise when you no longer rely on relationship rumination to bring relief in anxiety-provoking situations. Some of what surfaces will be unsettling. This is because exploration is risky. When you face aspects of yourself you've avoided, denied, or buried under repetitive negative thinking, there are bound to be risks. But avoiding exploration is also risky. In Helen Keller's words, avoiding danger is no safer in the long run than outright exposure. The fearful are caught as often as the bold. In other words, ignoring relationship rumination isn't a safe choice either. Overthinking in your relationship carries its own set of costs, risks, and consequences. These may include anxiety, joylessness, a nagging sense of something missing, and existential angst. Doing what you've always done because you've always done it fuels disconnection, resentment, and unhappiness. The goal isn't avoiding discomfort. It's getting to the root of your relationship problems while remaining curious, open, and connected through difficult moments. If there's abuse, mental illness, trauma, or addiction in your relationship, seek trusted guidance and support. In some cases, mood or attention deficit disorders may interfere with your ability to do certain practices and exercises. If you've felt sad, fearful, irritable, forgetful, hopeless, or unmotivated for more than a few weeks in a row, consider talking with a therapist or other mental health professional. No self-help book can be a stand-in for supportive mental health treatment, couples therapy, or psychopharmacology when that's what you need. If you and your partner have little or no foundation of safety in your relationship, be honest with yourself about where you are. As long as hostility interferes with caring, respectful speaking and listening, digging deeper without a professional guiding you can backfire and fuel conflicts. The same goes for strong-arming your partner into working through this book when they don't want to. Instead, work through it separately. Consider revisiting the joint exercises together later. Or else make peace with working through this book on your own without your partner's active participation. Understanding more about relationship rumination and doing the exercises and practices on your own can still benefit you greatly as a couple. Intentional speaking and listening. When we speak to people in our everyday lives, we usually focus on conveying information or eliciting the response we want. In everyday speaking and listening, it's also common to multitask as we share and listen. We talk into a headset while pushing a grocery cart and scanning shelves. We respond to emails during a lecture. We ring up items on a cash register while chatting about the weather. We navigate traffic as our partner relays an anecdote. Our attention is divided. Intentional speaking and listening is different from what you do when you communicate with other people while you're multitasking. In this book's joint exercises, you'll be invited to assume the roles of speaker and listener. The speaker-listener format has been a core component of cognitive behavioral couple therapy for several decades, and before that, of behavioral couple therapy. When your entire focus is on sharing reflections or on listening to what your partner shares, your attention is qualitatively different than normal. Next, you'll find a list of your responsibilities for each role. Responsibilities when speaking. Share you. Don't talk about yourself, as if you were reporting. Instead, share what's rooted in your body, what's true for you right now. Don't withhold what's vulnerable or uncomfortable for you to admit. Risk disclosing your imperfections and flaws. Own your reality. If something your partner says or does sets off a defensive reaction or a mental pinwheel of negative thoughts, reorient your attention to the here and now. Resist the temptation to slip into theories or stories about your partner unless you preface them with, "What I make up about you is," or "The story I tell myself about you is." Keep the focus on yourself when you speak, using I statements. Connect with what's happening inside you right now. For example, "I feel," "My interpretation is," "I have an impulse to," "I'm conscious of." Remain present focused rather than past or future focused. It's harder to get caught up in rumination cycles of blame, control, worry, doubt, or self-pity when you're in the present. If thoughts spin, try to see the content of these thoughts and to recognize them as thoughts. If you're sharing about something that happened in the past, pay attention to how you're experiencing your recollection of it in your body now. Let yourself not know. Share open-ended, personal reflections over absolute truths and certainties. Allow yourself not to know rather than presenting yourself as all-knowing. Responsibilities when listening. Ground yourself. Quiet your own mental chatter, stories, interpretations, and ruminative thinking by sensing where your body makes contact with the chair or the floor. Remind yourself of your partner's fundamental goodness and humanity. Remain humble when you're tempted to believe you know more about who they are than they do. Resist the urge to criticize, judge, nitpick, negate, control, or dismiss. Notice and release the impulse to listen selectively or distort your partner's words to reinforce a cherished opinion you hold of them. Focus your full attention on your partner. When you get distracted by your own thoughts or reactions, recommit to your role as listener. Remain curious. There's always more to your partner than meets the eye. Listen with an open mind. Trust and stay in the process. Settle into the unknown of whatever is emerging, as unsettling as this may feel. Surrender control for the time being. Allow what's true and real in this one moment you're living to be enough. Sometimes what your partner shares will raise your anxiety. If this happens, make a mental note of it. "I'm feeling some anxiety." Do what you can to soothe yourself. You'll learn ways to do this in upcoming chapters. Avoid jumping to conclusions, fixing things, rescuing your partner, or seeing their discomfort as your issue to solve. In the role of listener, you support your partner by being with them as they are, without trying to change them. Thinking about versus being with. I'm going to invite you to make a small but radical shift in how you approach internal and external experiences, particularly the ones that set off rumination cycles. You'll be pivoting from thinking about moments that unsettle you to being with them. Most of our thinking about muscles are overdeveloped. In contrast, our being with muscles are underused. If our ability to think about our experiences were represented by one leg and our ability to be with our experiences were represented by the other, most of us would hop around like kids doing potato sack races. Our thinking about legs would be oversized.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?